It's a rainy Sunday morning, so you know what that means.
Slip and slide.
Absolutely. Can we actually, Producer Joe, do you mind if we expend some slip and slides on the podcast budget?
I'll check the petty cash, but I think we can do some slip and slides.
For sure. Right, sell on, some pajamas, Brad.
Okay.
I think we can get some slide.
All right. Yeah. Well, anyway, otherwise it's known as the Time for the Sucks podcast. I am your host, Brad.
And I'm your host, Dave.
And I'm your friendly neighborhood producer, Joe.
And this is a podcast where us dummies talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us all every day. And we are lovers, not experts. But we started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way that they are.
And where those design decisions might have gone off the rails.
And sometimes we kind of luck into having some really interesting guests who are smarter than us to help us learn about some shit. So good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good, Brad. You mixed it up there a bit. I like it. What's going on?
Just trying to keep it a little bit more free flowing, a little more natural.
All right.
As our longtime, you know, users and listeners know, like every word of this podcast is entirely scripted, including what I'm saying right now, and including what you're about to say next. Blue banana Sasquatch.
Yes, thank you. All I had was potatoes, and I'm like, that's not funny. Potatoes aren't funny.
They could be. Potatoes they be could funny? Be.
Although, you know, I know you guys love to talk about my cream of corn obsession. Have you heard about this kid who's like the king of corn on the internet? He's a TikTok viral sensation.
Yeah, are you sure it's king of corn with a C?
I don't know, but he just has this little corn. He just talks about corn and they made it into a song. That could have been me, guys, if you did not clip my wings about the cream of corn. Although maybe we could piggyback on it and do a cream of corn song.
I mean, this sounds a lot like the story of your life.
The difference is that kid likes corn on the cob, which is right to like, whereas cream corn is a demon product.
Still clipping my wings, Joe. I see what you do. It's just not right. That's all I'm saying. Just let me fly. Okay.
You know what? You should just take those broken wings and learn to fly. Learn to live so free.
Thank you.
All right.
Speaking of flying, you know, last week we talked about Sex in the City with our guest, right? And she was Team Aiden, which was great. Brad, have you caught up? Because I called you out. I said, we have not watched. And just like that,
right through,
I did my homework. I watched the entire season.
Did
How
you
about
really?
You? I all did. Right,
well,
you did.
All right. I'm going to have to burst your bubble a little bit here. And this is going to get pretty uncomfortable for all of us.
Oh, no.
You know, this Sex in the City thing has been like a long running bit on this podcast. But look, I've seen most of Sex in the City by nature of being married for the past 15 years.
Right.
It doesn't make me a giant fan. Not a giant fan. I think it's a great show, but I'm not like, it's not
Brad.
It doesn't mean something to me like it does.
Oh my God. Okay. I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. I'm going to slip into my Steve here. Okay, Brad, you're breaking my heart. Kind of like Miranda broke Steve's heart, you know? And I know it's a bit. I know what you're doing is a bit against a bit. It's an anti-bit. It's a bit within a bit. I get it. Okay.
Well, for our users, you know, I do want to give you some props, Dave. Your entire face morphed into Steve's. literally look like Steve from Sex and the City as you're doing the impression.
Can I pause on the Steve? The reason I do the impression is his voice changed ridiculously. Like suddenly he just, you know, he swallowed his dentures or something. He got older. And I have a theory. I think when Miranda broke his heart and divorces him, it's like when the emperor gets zapped, you know, and he turns into this 1930s horror monster.
Yeah.
In the prequels.
Heard of
it. I think it was like that. I think it was, you know, because I went back and I watched when he met like their little meet cute back in the day. And he meets Miranda at a bar, right?
Okay.
And by the way, he calls it right there. He goes, "Oh, who'd you get in a fight with on? Well, who'd you get in a fight with on the phone? Was it boyfriend?" And they pauses and he goes, "Girlfriend?" He knew all the way back then. Could have saved themselves years of heartache. Anyway, I'm very upset, Brad. If you're telling the truth, this is not good. I'm going to need a new Sex in the City fan. We're going to have to screen guests. You know, we should ask our guest today, Jason, if he's a Sex in the City fan. If he's not, we should just cut his mic. Just get him out of here.
And of course, we'll give him a proper intro later. But Jason, do you have any significant thoughts on Sex in the City?
No, although I will say, living in New York in the 2000s, boy, did it have an effect on social culture at that time in the city.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, okay. He lived for real in the city. I like it. All right, you could stay. you could stay, Jason.
Okay.
Also, your guest last week was a fan of Real Time.
Yeah,
Dave or Brad. I don't know if you watched Fridays, but Scott Galloway.
Oh
was,
yeah. My fake wow. mentor, Scott Galloway. Yeah, sure.
That's crazy. Bringing it all together. Like, yeah. Sucks podcast. Yeah.
Cream Corps, Scott Galloway, it's Sex of the City. It's
yeah. I'm calling him my fake mentor now because I was not granted admittance into the Code conference that happened in Los Angeles last week, even though I had applied in plenty of time. It's actually not even his pod. It's not even his conference. It's Kara Swisher's. But still, I'm going to carry a grudge for a while.
Mm. You know what it is, Brad? He thought your affinity for him was also a bit. So he's like, fuck that guy.
Well, it wasn't a bit, but now in the future, moving forward, it might have to just be a bit, just like my love of Sex in the City. Anyway, should we get going here? We've got a segment that we might want to.
I mean, now that we can't talk about Sex in the City for 4 hours, fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we'll do a podcast about user design.
Yeah, we could just call it. Right.
Fun, it's good because the Eagles game started. No.
All right, half hour. We're here. Why don't we talk about some cool shit?
It's cool shit. It's old people telling you what's cool. Okay, guys. Yeah, so this is great. So wasn't this a Tesla thing? Tell me why, as I'm talking about this, if this was like a Tesla dream, but not the car. The
you mean
person.
Nikolai Tesla?
Yeah.
The original, yes.
But hang on. Back it up. You got to set up what we're talking about. And
No. I'm gonna lead with it so people get interested. Cool. Oh, what's he going to say? It's a technique, Brad. But thanks for breaking that flow. You did that last week, too.
Yeah. I'm getting good at it.
Okay. So researchers just wirelessly transmitted power over 98 feet of thin air. This is the dream, guys, right? You hate, you know, we've got the wireless chargers that we place the phone down on. That's great. But this is talking about, like, you could be in an airport and you could be just using your phone, boom, zapping, getting charged. Okay. So
it's called lightning.
So basically what they do is that these small sensors and that right now the charge is not that much, so they can't be charging your phones just yet, but the technical term for this is distributed laser charging. It's safer and it goes farther than previous experiments, so they've been doing this for a bit. It's a pretty basic concept. I mean, I don't know if people want the technical stuff. It's just a thing.
I've been hearing about this concept for many years, and I think that it does date back to Nikolai Tesla.
Okay.
And of course, I have to tell you that, like, my knowledge of Nikolai Tesla is third grade plus whatever they talk about in the movie The Prestige, which is a great movie.
That's right.
So that's what I know about Tesla. But no, I've been hearing about this concept for a while. Like, I don't think that's a new thing.
Yeah, no, it's not. But they're coming close to getting it done. And you know, when we're sitting in that airport or we're sitting in our house and we're just on our phones and it's 100% always, you know what that's going to be, Brad?
Cool shit. Old people telling you what's cool.
Thank you, sir.
You know, that does touch on like my biggest design pet peeve in city planning and the world in general, which is power lines. I hate power lines. I hate seeing power lines. I think it's ridiculous that we have to look at power lines all the time.
Agreed.
Most cities are going underground now.
There you go.
Absolutely. Why didn't they do that all along? You know, I've got power lines in my backyard. It's a nice backyard, and I have to look at these ugly fucking things. It drives me nuts.
Easier to put up a pole than dig a hole. I just rhymed.
That sounds like a euphemism, but I'm trying to, you know, break it down. It's easier to put up a pole than to dig a hole. Yeah.
Watch yourself, counselor. What is that? Wait, you like this type of content? You want it to get salty? You want to hear extended interviews and bonus content? Well, go on over to our Patreon account. That is patreon.com/ourpodsucks, S-U-X, and sign up for all that salty content you crave.
If you cut that out, I swear to God, this podcast is over. All right. Okay. Well, that was some cool shit, Dave. Joe, what do you got?
Okay. So we all know that Perseverance was the Mars rover that they sent up a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And one of the things that is on that Mars rover is the MOXIE device. And I'll give it, it's, I don't know how this stands for MOXIE, but it's the Mars Oxygen In Situ Resource Utilization Experiment. What it's supposed to be doing is turning the carbon dioxide into oxygen. So basically CO2, taking off the carbon and releasing O2 as, like, you know, free oxygen particles. Okay. And it's working, and that's cool. And that's the news story. But I'm just wondering, like, why are we so excited about it on Mars? Isn't that something we can do here to decarbonize the air? Doesn't it seem like something we could just put on our balconies? And
yeah,
I don't know. I'd like to see it go in that direction. Like, why can we decarbonize Mars, but we can't decarbonize our own planet?
Didn't we talk about a story a few weeks back where they put some of this technology on trains where it was like sucking up the CO2?
The train had the power to make this mobile so that basically, you know, they become basically moving vacuums traveling across the country using no additional power other than their own braking power. Yeah. But if we could actually have, like, you know, a lunchbox sized device just sitting on our porch making, you know, 5 or 6 trees worth of clean air all the time, that would be cool too.
We should be cool shit.
We should be doing all of it, I guess, you know.
Right. You know what that would be? Cool shit.
So that was some cool shit. Jason, we'll cut this out unless you happen to have anything worth adding here. But any cool shit that you want to mention today?
Optional.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I was just reading the script. Sorry.
Thank you for keeping us, you know, on script verbatim. Your line was optional. All right. Let's take a quick break, pay some bills, and we will come back with today's main topic, and we'll give our guest a proper introduction.
Oh, you're back. Well, that's good, because we don't have an ad read. Ad reads are so yesterday. Personal, one-on-one, intimate connections are where it's at. You're a fan. You're a big fan. You were here since episode 1. You hate that this episode was late because Audio Dave doesn't have a backup. You're sad that a YouTube account doesn't exist, robbing you of viewing Brad's glorious locks and fancy pajamas. You want to help. So patreon.com/ourpodsucks is where you need to go. If 100 people give $5 a month, hell, we can even get someone on that social media to put out the good word. The bad word. Well, the good, the bad, I don't know. I mean, 1,000 people at $10 might even get us a writer. So get going to patreon.com/ourpodsucks, you super user, you.
And we can't do that. I've got a year's supply of cream corn on my Amazon wish list. That's at Amazon/.
And we are back with today's main topic and today's returning guest, architect Jason Stoikoff. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning.
Hey, Jason.
How are you guys?
Could you take that, but bring your energy level down a bit? You're blown out. Just kidding. Jason and I were at a Lady Gaga concert with our families last night, and it was a late night, especially for Jason. But Jason, thank you so much for coming back to the podcast. For our listeners and for our users, Jason, you are our very first guest ever on the Sucks podcast, all those years ago. And, you know, so much has changed since then. You know, as we are sitting in our Sucks podcast office building now, with all of our swag on, I mean, it just feels like coming full circle with you is such a great thing. So thank you for returning. Jason, how you been?
Good. Thank you for having me back. And I have to say that, you know, I'm looking, so just for your listeners, know that there's a little bit of a loose script and, you know, in the biggest font, like everything's like 12 point font on the script, but there's one line that's like a bigger font. Uh-huh. And it says, Jason should make fun of Joe. Like, in the biggest font. So I just wanted to give a little behind
Joe
the
put
scenes
that in there,
the
otherwise
listeners.
I'm going to feel bad.
Literally, it's the most important thing in the script.
I can't wait.
Joe, did you put that in there?
Yes.
Okay, good.
But you can cut that out, Dave. Probably the The funniest thing from season one was the light through space thing, which we brought back again in our Sucks of Podcasting episode.
And you know, Joe has a thing about this, because when he started talking about the moon rover to Mars, that's another thing with lights on that was shot through space. So it's kind of like all Joe can think about is this light being shot through space.
Yes.
He's a dreamer.
And that's why his favorite movie series is Thor, because of that rainbow bridge going through space.
Yeah.
That's right.
I can see Joe as Thor. Could you see Joe as Thor?
I could see him as A-Thor. Not the Thor, but A-Thor.
A-Thor?
A-Thor.
A-Thor?
A-Thor.
Oh, I thought it was like, you mean A-Thor.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought it was like a bootleg Thor, like, you know, like the GoBots are to Transformers.
Kind of, yeah. You know, six of one, half a dozen of another, you know? Okay, all right, we are having some fun today, and I don't know how to transition into a really heavy topic, so I'll just do it. So today's episode is about hostile design. Hostile design, sometimes called defensive architecture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a disturbing theme, and it's really not a fun subject, so I'm going to try again to transition us into this. But
start with the pigeons. Pigeons are silly. Pigeons are fun.
Okay, so Jason, in a second, I'm going to ask you to give us a definition of what hostile design is. But like, it started here, you know, putting spikes on branches and walls and stuff so pigeons can't land on them. That was the starting point. That's an example of what hostile design is. It's meant to be defensive against a thing. But, you know, is there another broader definition that you can give us, Jason?
Yeah, and I'm just going to read this. Hostile architecture is an urban design strategy. I don't know if I agree with that. Mm-hmm. That uses elements of the built environment to purposely guide or restrict behavior. And this is the key sentence, I think. Mm-hmm. It often targets people who use or rely on public space more than others, such as youth, poor people, and homeless people. So that, to me, that's the difference between, say, mm-hmm. locking your front door and the pigeon spikes, or, you know, what we'll talk about is that, you know, most people socially accept that you want to be private in your house and keep people out because mm-hmm. it's your property. Mm-hmm. But I think when we talk about hostile design, we're referring to maybe more public spaces that are excluding a certain socioeconomic bandwidth of people, like homeless people.
Yeah, well said. And that is the crux of what we're going to be talking about today. There are other examples that aren't as extreme. I started thinking about this when I have a new puppy. If anybody wants this puppy, I will drop them off at your house. Not a fan. Part of the reason I'm not a fan is this goddamn dog won't stop peeing on my brand new couch, two brand new couches. So I've had to, like, you know, wash these cushions so many times, and I've had it. I'm about ready to throw this dog. Sorry, edit that out.
No, that's getting doubled. That's
I'm
going
not throwing
in.
Any dogs.
Oh my
Never
god!
Never throw a dog.
I mean, you could throw a dog out without throwing the dog out. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's a metaphor, or figuratively speaking.
Okay, so here's what I found on Amazon. They have these spike pads, and spike is a misnomer. There's these like plastic kind of like raised bumps and stuff that you throw down on your couch, and then you roll them up pretty easily. And what it does is, you know, when you're not right there, when you're not using the couch, the dog can't get on it. So I did that. That is an example of hostile design or defensive design, right? So it is effective of keeping that dog off of the couch. Now, to tee up a theme, it's not potty training the dog. It's doing nothing to solve the problem of actually, like, you know, teaching this dog of where it needs to go to the bathroom.
That ties right into the theme. It's
but
a band-aid.
So
not even a band-aid.
That was about 3 weeks ago, and then, you know, that started dovetailing into some research, and that's where we are today.
Should we give some other examples so that people kind of know more, like, what we're talking about in the real world?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Absolutely. Why don't we go round robin? Joe, do you want to give a couple examples?
Benches, park benches have been mm-hmm. redesigned to either be segmented or have like bars or struts on them so that unhoused people can't sleep on them.
Yeah. And only for that reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Skaters. We talk about skaters, right? You know, mm-hmm. whenever you see like a wall or like a ledge, like a planter ledge or something, I don't know what you call it. They put little pieces of metal every few inches or so, so that skaters can't do a, what's it called?
A grind.
Grind. There it is.
An ollie.
You got an ollie to get to the grind.
You got an ollie into the grind, into the front kick Superman.
Yeah, sure. So you can't do that if there are these little metal pieces. So that's another one. Right. What do you got, Jason?
Yeah, the other example is sometimes we've seen spikes on vents in New York so that the homeless can't sleep on the vents, even though it's warm there.
Right. So picture this, you know, you're unhoused. It's January in New York. It's negative 10 degrees and you just have to stay warm enough to live. And you have no place to go. And, you know, the warmth is coming out of the ventilation system from the subway, but you can't actually access it just for reasons, right? I mean, it's just, I think that's a good example.
Yeah. And I think, Brad, what's important about what you just said is, for me, there's two buckets of hostile design. One in which the quote-unquote hostile design addition is to make the thing function better for its original purpose, meaning.
Yes.
So there's a bench for people to wait for the bus.
Yes.
And if a homeless person or whoever is lying on that bench, then other people can't sit and wait for the bus. So that's an example of a design that is added to make it actually work the way it was intended, which that I don't have as much of a problem with as things that are added, like Dave's example, the planter, which still can do its job if someone's lying on it, but yet you add something so someone can't lie on it just because you don't want someone lying on it. And we should, early on in the discussion, we should talk about the different, you know, what's wrapped up in this is the difference between private and public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And what some people might argue right now, you know, just to get it out there on the table, is that, you know, some people on their private properties have the prerogative to let who they want to use it and don't let who they want to use it, right? And so what's interesting is, where is that line of private and public?
Totally.
And one might say, okay, you have a plaza.
Mm-hmm.
It's a public space. Mm-hmm. And others might say, yeah, but it's on private property. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember, and especially in urban environments, a lot of these public spaces are made because developers will get credits for that public space to allow them to build more square footage or allow them to build a taller building. So
that's a really good point.
It really, you know, most of these private, quote unquote, private spaces in cities that we're seeing this hostile design, it's really not a private property because they're getting tax credits and you know, we're funding to some degree this public space. So it's a public space.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I hadn't even thought about that because I would have instinctively thought, oh, that's their building. That's their decisions that they have to make. But that is great. That is a great point, Jason. Yeah.
So there is some nuance there. But there are some other examples that are purely punitive and that they are, you know, in public spaces or spaces that were designed to help people. One example is the biggest Catholic church in San Francisco. They had an issue with people who were experiencing homelessness, kind of sleeping in the archways and the doorways and stuff. Now, their solution to this was to put up a water feature, which would douse these people with water to prevent them from sleeping.
Gosh.
This is a church, by the way. this is a Catholic church, by the way. I just wanted to mention that. So that's an example of something that's a little fuzzier, I would say, as well. I have a couple other examples that I wanted to kind of throw out there before we move on to the rest of the conversation, just so we understand that there's more examples here that sometimes they're more invisible than you might think. An obvious one, though, is the freeway underpasses for people who live in big cities like Los Angeles. There are often people sleeping and camping under those freeway underpasses, and a recent trend is to put up obstacles to prevent them from doing that. Sometimes it's bumps, just uneven surfaces, rock features, stuff like that, so there's just not a flat surface. And sometimes it's dangerous. I've seen examples where they're like using like shards of glass and sharp objects to prevent people from camping there. It's pretty insane. Another example. In cities and public restrooms, you might find blue lights, weird blue lights. You wouldn't think that much about it. But the reason that they're there is so addicts can't see their veins.
Weird. Wow.
So they have lights to prevent addicts from seeing their veins so they can't shoot up in public restrooms. So that's pretty disturbing to me, right? Number one, it's not going to prevent anyone from shooting up. It's just going to make it much more dangerous for them to do so. And it's, of course, it's not solving any problems.
Sorry, is that a public or a private bathroom?
Both.
Okay. Both. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Last one. High frequency sounds that are literally not audible to people over 25 years old. This is kind of a cool one, actually.
Over 25?
I'm still mad at it, but it's all almost kind of cool. And this is more of like...
cool shit.
I don't know. I'm not going to go that far. But this is more of like on that skater example. So if you don't want like youths congregating in a public space, they literally have a high-pitched frequency that we cannot hear. But it would drive people who...
okay, so this is going to come in really handy, Brad, when Clemmy and Annabelle are teenagers. I think we should get this technology.
How is that possible? I want to know more about this, Brad.
All right. Jason, as an architect, you know, and you plan massive spaces and, you know, in big cities, has this ever entered into your discussions or into your planning, this concept?
So most hostile design examples that we sort of just talked about were kind of ad hoc, after the fact added and weren't designed in. But to your point, there are examples where it is designed in. Now, me personally, I haven't been asked in the projects I've worked on. It's never really been an issue of trying to design in hostile design. But I think for me, what's interesting about it is that it's not designed in. Because what happens in the original design is you're trying to make it useful for everybody. Generally, and how can we make it most functional? And then what happens is there's a sort of a socioeconomical impact or users using the thing that the owner doesn't want to. And so these things are added ad hoc. But me personally, I haven't had to design much hostile other than the normal like blocking doors and fences and things like that. Sure. But my question is, why is it worse? So if you have a bench and we put spikes on it so a homeless person can't sleep on it, that's terrible, right? But what if I just fence the whole thing off and say no one's allowed in unless you have access? Somehow that's not as bad.
Interesting.
Why?
So it's like a gated community is okay. I gotcha.
Optics. Yeah. I think the answer is optics, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the major themes of hostile design is that it's really not solving any problems. It's masking problems or making them invisible. So when it comes to, you know, people who are unhoused, the homeless epidemic, these solutions aren't designed to solve a problem. They're designed to shield and mask a problem from our view. So we don't have to think about it. And then, Jason, one thing that I thought that you mentioned that was really interesting, the fact that these are often afterthoughts, sometimes bolt-ons, sometimes literal bolt-ons in the case of, like, you know, putting obstructions on benches. Doesn't that by nature make it poor design? You know, bolting on afterthoughts onto design to make something, you know, do something different. That's never good design.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
But there are examples where it was originally aesthetically, like there are some benches that I've seen where they're either circular or they're wavy and it actually looks aesthetically pleasing, but you know that it was done that way for this functionality.
That's true.
So it's a fine line.
Well, hold on, Joe.
Sometimes they look good. What's that?
In the research that we did, there were examples of people who did not do that. They clearly stated their intention was to make it look aesthetically pleasing. I think there was a subway station or somewhere that had like a really cool kind of bench. And they were accused of hostile design. And they're like, that was not our intention. This was
purely aesthetic.
Yeah, this was like an idea we had that we thought it would look cool. It would look futuristic. And does happen as well.
Yeah, overpass is kind of an example of that too. Like, I think that looks better than just a flat concrete, you know, angular slab. Was it done as a landscaping feature, or was it done with the intention of? And I think it could be both. I mean, I'm kind of on both sides of this argument. I don't really have a strong POV either way, because
and this to me is the difference between sort of more conservative and more progressive policies is that I get it too, Joe. Like, literally, if someone's listening to this and saying, yeah, but you wouldn't want a homeless person sleeping outside of your house, I wouldn't, to be honest. I mean, it's, you know, I invest in this property. I don't want a homeless encampment outside of my house, right? So that's why, because the NIMBY, the not my backyard, that's why we need policies and in social structures to adequately take care of these people. Right. Because you're right, I don't want them in front of my house either. Like, I completely understand why you don't want pigeons shitting on you.
or skaters waxing your steps, or homeless people sleeping on your doorway or whatever.
I also don't want homeless encampments on my streets, but that doesn't mean that I just want them to go somewhere else, you know. Not any kind of solve. So two things can be true at the same time. Yes, I don't want these homeless encampments in my community, and I want to find a solution so there don't have to be homeless encampments anywhere. Because if they're not on my street, that means that they're under a freeway, or they're somewhere else. They're underground or something even worse, right? Like, if they're not on my street, they're somewhere far worse. For the people who are afflicted by this.
Yeah, I was going to say, it always concerns me when you're like, oh, there is a huge homeless encampment, and then suddenly there isn't. You're like, what did the city do with these people? They just bust them somewhere and dump them somewhere. Like, it literally happens where they just scoop people up and dump them somewhere else.
Yeah. And you know what? Let's not forget that, you know, the people who this impacts the most are the most vulnerable, marginalized parts of our community. Right. And, you know, that's incredibly important to remember.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if we could talk about the history here, but to tie into what you just said, there's this great quote from an article in The Guardian about this, and it said the architectural historian Ian Borden says the emergence of hostile architecture has its root in 1990s urban design and public space management. The emergence, he said, suggested we are only republic citizens to the degree that we are either working or consuming goods directly. So the idea is, it's okay to hang around, you know, like in a cafe or a spot, as long as you're consuming, right? As long as you're buying things and participating in this capitalist society. But if you're not, that's not okay. No loitering. Move on.
Right. Yeah.
The loitering example is something that I had in my research too. And as an example, like, you know, I've seen in my research, there's so many pictures of these park benches, and then right on the benches or right next to them, there are no loitering signs in public spaces. Right. So this tells me that I don't know what loitering means.
Mixed messages. Brad, it's simple. If you don't have a man bun and a caramel frappuccino and sitting there for 6 hours on your laptop, then you're loitering.
So that is exactly what makes me so sad about it, because it's to stop the unintended positive impact of something in the world.
Yeah.
So Dave, as you said, it's, you know, is this where we're at with capitalism, in that if something is invested in and something money is spent on, if it has an unintended positive impact to someone, you must stop that, because that's not what we paid for it to do. I mean, it's crazy.
I'll tell you, the more positive impact would be get rid of that man bun laptop situation. we have hostile design for that, you know.
To be fair, you're a man bun away from being that stereotype.
Hey man, I've never been that stereotype. Never get me with that, Brad.
I'll tell you one of the more clever, almost unhostile solutions I've seen to loitering. When I was in Seattle 20 years ago, when I was living there for a short period, it was weird. It felt really out of place. The local McDonald's played a lot of country music outside.
Oh yeah.
Doesn't feel like the right fit for Seattle. You're like, why would, and that's like, awesome. So the curiosity got the better of me. I went inside I asked, and they're like, oh yeah, we had a problem with like teenagers loitering, and we called the cops and we did everything we could to try to stop them from just loitering and hanging around and causing trouble. So we started playing country music and they went away.
So that's brilliant.
So if I can make a leap here, that sounds like there are some racist implications with this. If I can make some generalizations, if you're playing country music at McDonald's, maybe that's designed to target a specific subset of youth culture from hanging out.
It's possible.
I think it's regional. In Seattle, the grunge era. Exactly. And you're playing country music. I just, the first thing I said when Joe said that was, that's hostile. Because to me, I would run from that place. Sorry, all you country lovers, but that is like nails on a chalkboard to me.
No, there are some examples in the research of that, of playing polka music or some really like cool music or just, you know, high frequency sounds like we kind of touched on before.
Brad, we could make a million if we could record high frequency sound country songs. So combine the two into one. You know, I just looked up the definition of a loiter, and this is really interesting.
Yeah.
It says to stand or wait around idly or without apparent purpose. So this is so interesting because now you're making a one is making a judgment on someone that's standing around without purpose. So you talk about in this capitalist society, and you know, and I'm the one that's responsible for my own success. Uh-huh. Right. If I'm someone standing around without apparent purpose, that's a bad thing. You cannot stand around without purpose. You must have purpose, and you must be engaging. You know, it's you must be engaging in the economy. So if you're loitering,
you cannot rest.
If you're loitering, we must design in ways that you don't loiter. I mean, God, how perverse is that?
That's terrible.
You know, and Jason makes a good point because you have to determine intent. Like, if there's a guy standing on a corner in a business suit looking at his phone, you're going to be like, oh, he's not loitering. If somebody is just standing there with their hands in their pockets, just leaning against a tree, you know, loitering. But I think, again, we'll go back and forth on this too, because like, that's clearly a subjective level of legality or non-legality. But there are some of these things that where do we start normalizing illegality? Like in San Francisco, there was an example where they put up things to prevent people from jumping the turnstiles in the BART system, the Bay Area Rapid Transit. Well, you're not supposed to jump turnstiles. Like,
right. But with that one, Joe, not to break your flow, but they were calling them inverted guillotines because they're deadly. So it's like, you're not supposed to, but don't make them so that they're sharp and can hurt people.
I guess that's
And Joe, the article that you linked, it's from a website called the Anti-Racism Daily, the ARD.com. And it does infer, citation needed, that these prohibition against loitering does stem from, you know, the Jim Crow South, and it was specifically targeted against people of color. Like, that's where loitering laws or regulations came from.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Jason touched upon this on the first episode that he was on. I think, didn't you talk about how, like, certain bridges were made a certain way going to cities into certain areas to prevent what the heck, you know what I mean? Like,
Dave, I know what you're talking about, and Jason, if you have anything to add on here, jump in. But the example that you're talking about is public parks, beautiful public parks being built in specific areas, and then having height restrictions on the bridges to reach those public parks, meaning that you can't take a bus, meaning that you have to own an automobile to reach the place.
Is that what it was?
But there's other examples too, like they would literally put bridges and highways through poor neighborhoods. They're like, well, we don't want it in our neighborhood. We'll just destroy a, you know, perfectly good but lower income neighborhood with this overpass, this highway. And then of course, Dave, you were talking about redlining, and that's all that, I mean, that's, these are all bigger topics.
So, so I guess what I'm saying is, it goes, the design, the hostile design goes beyond park benches. And you know what I mean? Like, it gets really nefarious at a higher level.
Well, fun times.
Can we go back to pigeons? Because nobody likes pigeons.
Oh, by the way, like, you put spikes on tree branches so pigeons can't land on tree branches. That seems like a recipe for disaster.
Brad, listen.
And impale somebody.
The pigeon has a chance to get to not be a pigeon, but the pigeon chooses to be a pigeon. Yeah. So, you know, it's not my problem if the pigeon chooses to be a pigeon.
Hey, I got a thing about pigeons, guys. Do you know, pigeons are experiencing a form of racism. I don't know if I'll cut this because this might not land. No, think about it. What are pigeons? They're just fucking doves. Do you know that? They're just a type of dove.
They're a gray dove.
Doves of color.
Because they're not white.
Right.
They have spikes put on their hooves.
Yes. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say, Jason.
Let me tell you something. You get shit on by a bird, It don't matter if it's a dove or a pigeon.
Okay, fair
these,
enough.
These
fair
are
enough.
Words to live by. You're still getting shit on by a bird.
But it's good luck, Jason. It's good luck. Especially on your wedding day, I think.
We used to eat pigeons, too. It seems like that would be an organic solve for this problem. I've still been to really fancy restaurants, and they will serve pigeon. It's, wow. And it's yeah. pigeon.
Do they serve dove? There's a question.
No, they call it pigeon.
Aha. Uh-huh. See? Mm-hmm. See?
You're right. Dave, you're absolutely right.
Unbelievable.
All right. Well, we've sure had some fun here talking about hostile design, but maybe we should move on to talking about some solutions to hostile design, because there are some. You know, it's not a hopeless fight. It's an uphill struggle, though. I've got a couple, but do you guys have anything that you want to add for solutions? What can we do?
Well, can I ask you a question first? When you say solution, are you asking how do we keep homeless people off planters more effectively? Mm-hmm. Or are we asking, how do we make it so that we don't need to keep homeless people off of planters?
Ah, good question to the question.
The latter from my liberal POV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But your mileage may vary. So
yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm looking at it. But
I mean, this is a design. This is a design show, but it's also, it's more of a user experience show, right?
Yeah.
So we have to lean into the user experience, not so much the design. Yeah.
Okay. So then in leaning into the user experience, we have to consider both users. Mm-hmm. The person wanting to sleep on the bench.
Yes.
And the person wanting to have a sandwich at lunchtime when they're on their sandwich break from when they're being productive in capitalist society.
Yeah.
So we're not, this group probably isn't going to say, well, screw the person having the sandwich. You got to let the homeless person sleep there no matter what. That's an extreme view, right? And then the other view is the homeless people should never be sleeping there because they're not contributing to capitalist society and they're loitering. So it's somewhere in the middle. It's, I don't want the homeless encampment in my front yard, but I want to take care of homeless people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I think some people call that hypocritical, but as you mentioned, it's okay to have those both thoughts in your head at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive. That's sure. the death of political discourse in this country, is that you can't consider both those things as being true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, Jason, you said it the best. This is a political conversation more than a design conversation. I mean, in the lead up to this episode, you said that, and I think it's spot on. And I think a lot of the solutions are larger design solutions, and those designs take place in the architectural firm called the Senate, I think it's called, and the House. Right? It has Congress, that's what it's called.
It has a pretty poor Yelp rating, but
it does. It does really bad. It's like a 1.5.
And I just thought of the American with Disabilities Act. This is so interesting to me now. So barrier-free design is the opposite of hostile design. So, and this is what we do design to every day, because ADA is not a code in most places. It's a legislation. So we're now tasked in this country to design experiences for people that have disabilities. So we have to now be inclusive of them, which is great.
Yes.
But then why are we being exclusive to a lot of people with mental disabilities?
Yes.
So this now goes to the stigma of mental health. Like it just opens up so many conversations, right? So we have to design a way for the wheelchair. So what I could say, if I have steps and a person in a wheelchair gets up the steps and can't make it up the steps, oh my God, you're stopping the people that can walk up the steps. So get out of here, right? Person in a wheelchair, you're gumming up the system.
Right. So, but to flip that, Jason, maybe you've walked towards a solution. Maybe there needs to be someone who advocates for mental health in design in the similar way that we do for those who are disabled.
You know what? The reason why ADA legislation was enacted in this country was because of civil lawsuits. And who has the means to bring lawsuits but people with money? So a person with a disability may not necessarily be of lesser means, right, than a person without a disability. Hopefully not.
Right.
But say homeless or mentally challenged people, they don't have the means or the ways to bring lawsuits. So really again, in this country, it's the person with the money wins.
Well, maybe it could be somebody with the money who has someone in their family who's experiencing homelessness. Yeah. And let's not lump in all homelessness. Obviously, I know you're not doing this, Jason, but all homelessness is not mental health. Some is drug use. Some is just like a terrible home situation that leads to runaway, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I think we're onto something.
But, you know, we spend so much money, time and resources to, you know, sort of Band-Aid over these problems. I think that that's a really interesting avenue for how you could actually get legislation going is by hitting them where where their wallets are. Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense.
Brad brings up a point that I wanted to make in the fact that, like, I think this hostile design is actually kind of a microcosm of the bigger social problem. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we like to solve one problem at a time. Like, we see something wrong, pass a bill, throw money at it. Just like putting, you know, spikes on a grate solves that problem immediately. It doesn't solve the bigger problem. And I think overall it could actually cost less if we just invest initially the right amount of money in the right way.
And that's what I would say to the anyone who with more of a conservative bent who is listening to this episode, if there are any, is like, I don't believe that these problems are mutually exclusive from capitalism-based solutions. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that these two are that separate. I think you can be more effective with your spend and it's not just, you know, throwing money at a problem, which I think is what, you know, more conservative people might think. It's not that. And again, it's pretty early in the morning.
I agree with you. No, Brad, I know what you're saying. And it's the same argument I have with health insurance. Like, we love to get into our separate, you know, sides of the room. Communism. And it's like, yeah, but look at our current system. It's a hodgepodge of a million different systems. And it's so freaking expensive. Consolidating it, making it more efficient. Why the hell? I know this is an insurance episode. Maybe we'll do this episode. But it's like, why the hell do I have to fill out some paperwork every damn time I go to the doctor? Like, every year, some of them. Mm-hmm. Why is this not online, on a card, on my thumb? Like, that's an efficient measure that can be done in a solitary system that's well run. I mean, it's like, I don't get it. Maybe we do just give in and say, hey, okay, public private. Maybe there's some type of collaboration here that you can solve the problem without getting into these stupid little petty fights about like who's right and who's wrong and ideologies. Anyway,
agreed.
I'm ranting.
Good stuff.
That's a good example.
I have some other practical things that we can do, and one of them speaks to the same thing. Nice. And it's that it's confronting our own comfort level with seeing the pandemic of homelessness. It's like, we don't like to see it. I agree. I also don't like to see it. But that visibility is maybe the biggest awareness driver of the problem. If we don't see it, then we're not going to really fix the problem, which I think is solvable. You know, we have the means. We have the brain trust, the power, and the money to do it. But if we just continue to ignore it, which is what hostile design is really intended to do, to allow us to ignore it, then it's never really going to be addressed. So,
and call it out.
Call it out.
Call out the design crimes.
So there's a website that is called hostiledesign.org. And they will sell you a sheet of design crime stickers. And you can check it out at hostiledesign.org. In full transparency, I think that this site might be slightly deprecated. It looks like it might be a little bit run down. But theoretically, there are these stickers that you can order. You can like put them on the park benches, and it's calling out that it's a design crime.
Yep.
And it's designed to be punitive.
And Brad, now, you know, we at the Sucks podcast, I don't know if this counts as what's the word I'm looking for? Defacing property. I don't think a sticker is, but maybe. So you do your research. And if it isn't that, maybe put a little card, you know, a little card.
Check your local restrictions on that before you put a sticker on a public bench. I'm just giving you guys what I found in my research. You do with it what you may.
And even without that website, you can go ahead and you can write on a Sharpie on a piece of paper with a tape and put it on the bench. This is a design crime, is what they say.
Another thing I found on that line is like you can submit a public information request for your city planning commission for why there might be these hostile design elements. And, you know, they will answer those. The example use case that I found is in Seattle. They put these bike racks under underpasses, much like boulders or spikes or anything. They're obviously not designed to park bikes there. They're designed to stop homeless encampments. So a regular person like us, submitted a public information request for why these were installed, why city funding was used to do this, and they got the answer that they suspected. And then they evangelized that answer and that formalized response to the press, and then they were removed.
Right. So,
that's a specific example that we can do, that we have the power to do.
Right. And getting into your city councils and having these conversations is important. Too few people do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been to like 2 city council meetings in my life, maybe 3. So I'm calling myself out on this. We need to be more involved at the local level. And the whole, what do you call it? NIMBY? Jason?
NIMBY.
That whole thing. Think through it. I don't have a solution to it because sure, I don't want a homeless encampment in my backyard. But when they decide, and this is happening in my neighborhood, they pushed them out of the park. They pushed those who are unhoused out of a park. And then it was like, okay, we're going to build housing for folks who do not have homes. And then everybody's like, no, not here. And it's like, well, which one do you want? Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, maybe think through that, take part in the discussion, go to your city council meetings and find a solution, you know?
Yeah. You know, the good news is that it seems like in my research, the examples that I found, when the populace realizes the purpose of some of these hostile design elements, they tend to react against it. That's positive. So once people understand what it is, they have a problem with it. Now, it's meant to be kind of invisible to us, but if you can understand why that these decisions were made, then you can react against it. And awareness is the only thing that we can really accomplish today. You know, some of this is invisible if you're not looking for it. If you live in a city, look for it. Be aware. Don't assume because you don't see something that a problem doesn't exist.
Brad, and all that invisibility, if I could just get one more thing in here, it's not just what is there, but it's also the absence of stuff.
Yes.
As I was reading there, talking about how like, oh, we'll have a plaza without any benches, without a bathroom, without these things. And that is also hostile design. They do that so that there is no place for anyone to sleep, right? You know, so that, you know, I don't know how you approach
that.
And
if you want to do that, fine, but have a solution somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, to wrap it up, like good design should be about solving problems and not hiding problems. And I do have to give credit to the Extra Credits YouTube channel for that line, because I thought it was a pretty good way to sum up the conversation today from a design POV. All right. Well, typically we make a joke that we solve problems on this podcast. Like we did an episode on Spotify and then they fixed Spotify, and we did an episode on HBO and then they fixed HBO or whatever the case may be. This happens time and time again. So I would love to report back a year from now and claim that we've solved this problem. You guys want to give us the over under on that one?
Agree. Well, yeah, I don't. Let's just dream, Brad. Let's just dream.
Dream big. All right. And that is our episode. Thank you so much for listening. And Jason, thanks to you for joining us so early on a Sunday morning. Is there anything that you'd like to plug, or, you know, do you want to let people know where they can reach you? No is a fine answer.
Optional.
Thank you for reading your line.
You guys are never going to have me on ever again.
His line was optional. He nailed it. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you could, we would really appreciate it. And in the meantime, we are wishing you all health, a well-designed life, and good experiences.